This is your community radio station, 88.3 Southern FM.
And coming up right now is the Space Show. And this music will introduce the show. And that is music by Jessica Locke for the movie Race for the Moon, Apollo 8. Yes, again this week we are going to be looking at Apollo 8. So welcome to the Space Show, which is presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. And we've got a little message here from Sher.
If I could find a way, I'd take back those words that hurt you, and you'd stay. I don't know why I did the things I did. I don't know why I said the things I said.
Well, that's sure trying to turn back time. And, well, here on Southern FM, we can turn back time. We're going to go back 55 years to Apollo 8. Yes, we did that last week, but we left them in orbit around the moon. So let's see how they got back home. Now, to Apollo 8, the Christmas mission, 1968, 55 years ago. And Frank Borman gave these Christmas greetings.
And God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called he seas. And God saw that it was good. And from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless all of you on the good earth.
And that message from the moon came as Apollo 8 neared the end of its 10 orbits around the moon. So all too soon, it was time to ignite the service propulsion engine and accelerate out of lunar orbit and head for home. Their speed increased by 44,000 kilometers per hour, up to 9,700 kilometres per hour to get them out of lunar orbit. Of course, on the way to the moon, they had been quite astonished by the view of the Earth rather than the view of the moon.
Due to what you're seeing is the Western Hemisphere, looking at the top is the North Pole. In the center, just lower to the center, is South America, all the way down to Cape Horn. I can see Baja California and the southwestern part of the United States. There's a big fog cloud bank going northeast. Covers a lot of the Gulf of Mexico, going up to the eastern part of the United States. And it appears now that the east coast is cloudy. I can see clouds over parts of Mexico. The parts of Central America are clear. And we can also see the light bright spot of the subsolar point on the light side of the Earth. Okay, for colors, the waters are all a sort of a royal blue. Clouds, of course, are bright white. The reflection off the Earth is much greater than the moon. The land areas are generally a brownish, sort of dark brownish to light brown in texture. Many vortices of clouds can be seen of various weather cells, and that long band of Cirrus clouds that extend from the entrance to the Gulf of Mexico going straight out across the Atlantic. The Terminator, of course, cuts through the Atlantic Ocean right now, going from north to south. Southern Hemisphere is almost completely clouded over, and up near the North Pole, there's quite a few clouds. Southwestern Texas and southwestern United States is clear. I'd say there's some clouds up in the northwest and over in the northeast portion.
After blasting out of orbit, then we had Harrison Schmitt in mission control. And 40 minutes after that blast out of orbit and heading towards the Earth, Harrison Schmitt read up a parody written by some of the friends of the astronauts at Cape Canaveral.
Hi, boy, Jack here, and we've got some good words here that originated at the Cape with a bunch of friends of yours. And it's sort of in a paraphrase of a poem that you're probably familiar with. Do you read me out, Apollo 8?
You're loud and clear, Jack.
Okay, 'twas the night before Christmas and way out in space. The Apollo 8 crew had just won the moon race. The headsets were hung by the consoles with care in hope that Chris Kraft soon would be there. Now, Frank Borman was nestled all snug in his bed while visions of rest mats danced in his head. And Jim Lovell in his couch and Anders in the bay were racking their brains over a computer display. When out of the disky there rose such a clatter, Frank sprang from his bed to see what was the matter. Away to the sextant he flew like a flash to make sure they weren't going to crash. The light on the breast of the moon's jagged crust gave a luster of green cheese to the gray lunar dust. When what to his wondering eyes should appear but a Burma shave sign saying Kilroy was here. But Frank was no fool, he knew pretty quick that they had been first. This must be a trick. More rapid than rockets, his curses they came. He turned to his crewmen and called them a name. Now Lovell, now Anders. Now don't think I'd fall for that old joke you've written up on the wall. They spoke not a word but grinning like elves, and laughed at their joke in spite of themselves. Frank sprang to his couch. To the ship gave a thrust, and away they all flew past the gray lunar dust. But we heard them explain ere they flew round the moon, Merry Christmas to Earth. We'll be back there real soon. Great job, gang.
Thank you very much. That's a very good point. But in order to win the race, you got to end up on the carrier.
And that poem was read by Jack Schmitt, who actually later went to the moon as a geologist on the final Apollo landing mission, which was Apollo 17. And that reading came at 89 hours and 59 minutes into the mission as they headed back towards Earth. Well, on last week's show, we had Walter Cunningham discussing aspects of the mission, and he's back here again to describe the homebound part of the trip.
On the 10th and final trip across the back of the moon came the most suspenseful moment of the space program to that time. Shortly before reestablishing contact, it was necessary to burn the service module engine for 2.5 minutes if they were ever to return home. Talk about a pregnant pause. That was it. Waiting for radio contact at the proper acquisition time, we all held our breath. And when they appeared on time with the spacecraft tracking for home, a loud and spontaneous cheer went up that would be repeated each time this scene was reenacted in the years following. It seemed only minutes later that Borman reported, "Lovell is already snoring." In the control room, we were all laughing then in that nervous way caused by excitement. Borman, Lovell, and Anders had hung their fannies over the cliff and had been able to bring them in on cue. It was not the cheap thrill of a circus stunt, or of forcing oneself to dive off a 30-foot tower, or submitting to an impulse to walk the edge of a tall building, but rather the satisfaction of accomplishing an objective which entailed a lot of risk, professionally and under control all the way.
The long fall back toward Earth ended with Apollo 8 entering the atmosphere at an unprecedented 40,000 kilometers per hour. We here on Earth waited anxiously. Would the crew survive?
Houston, Apollo, over.
Go ahead, Apollo 8. Reach your broken and
a real fireball. It's looking good.
Outstanding.
And President Johnson was in the final weeks of his presidency when Apollo 8 returned to Earth. And, of course, he wasted no time making a phone call to the astronauts.
Europeans, nearly five centuries ago, who heard stories of the New World for the first time. There's just no other comparison that we can make that's equal to what you've done or to what we feel. I had a memorandum a short time ago from the men who handle the Washington-Moscow hotline, and I thought you would be interested in a portion of that memorandum to the president. It said that due to the interest of the Soviets in the Apollo program, we asked them, after we heard from them on Apollo 7, if they would be interested in being informed of developments in Apollo 8. And the hotline personnel in Moscow responded enthusiastically and asked us to keep them posted. So we informally here at the hotline in Washington relayed information in regard to the most important aspects of your flight. And the Soviets were very solicitous about the welfare of you astronauts and expressed a great interest in the success of the flight. Now, we all know that you men were supported by an elaborate technical apparatus and by many brilliant and devoted men and women here on the ground. And we salute all of them as we salute you. The first thing I did this morning when things looked good was to call your boss, Dr. Payne, and Jim Whitman, an admiration for the three of you that were out there in the vastness of space. If I could have exchanged thoughts with you, I was going to ask you whether it felt better coming down or going up. And to have you tell me some of your experiences, because you've seen what man has really never seen before. You've taken all of us, all over the world into a new era. And my thoughts this morning went back to more than 10 years ago in the Pernalis Valley when we saw Sputnik racing through the skies, and we realized that America had a big job ahead of it. It gave me so much pleasure to know that you men have done a large part of that job. So we rejoice that you are well, and we send you congratulations from all of your fellow countrymen and from all peace-loving people in the world. Well done.
And so ended one of the most daring spaceflights 55 years ago. Next year, NASA plans to send the Artemis II crew of four around the moon. They will be the first people in half a century to see the whole of the moon.
I saw the crescent.
And this will be 2 years after the uncrewed Artemis 1 flew beyond the moon. One of the astronauts aboard Apollo 8 was Captain Lovell. He went on to a second mission to the moon on Apollo 13. That's the one that exploded. It was intended to land on the moon, but because of the explosion, they went around the moon and came right back to Earth. Fortunately, they got there. Well, Gabriel Calasorisi has written this piece about Jim Lovell.
Captain Lovell, my eyes are shaky and glimmer like the stars. My head turns to the left and it moves just like a pendulum. The kids laugh and shake it back to me all the ways I'm stupid, not like them. But I know how the grass sounds when the locusts come, like a spaceship taking off, and how it makes the air shake. Captain Lovell, I heard it in the branches and the leaves. I heard the rocket leaving. My teacher said it wasn't so, that you're past hearing, but my father said I could. He puts his hands hard on my shoulders from behind and holds my head still with his looking. But I can feel how much I want to shake and let myself go loose and double like a cloud of mayflies on the lake. You know just how they rise, so you couldn't see just one of them, not even with your thumb held up to catch one with your eyes. It's something I can't do that Babe and David can't sight the stars or use a telescope or even fire a gun. Dr. Lovell, I like to think you're spinning and can't feel it like I can't feel the world shake unless I'm really tired, and then it's like a gift to let it go and just stop trying so hard. I like to think you let go too, and when the kids run at me and move their heads from left to right and call me zigzag, I look up and wish myself up there with you, just calm and swinging through the stars.
And that was Gabriel Calasorisi's poem, Captain Lovell, and it wasn't actually read by Gabriel herself. However, the next poem is going to be read by the poet. And this is A Bubble of Blue Air, and it's by Archibald MacLeish. And it's inspired by Apollo 8 and was recorded in 1968 by the young poet.
For the first time in all of time, men have seen the earth, seen it not as continents or oceans from the little distance of 100 miles or 2 or 3, but seen it from the depths of space, seen it whole and round and beautiful and small as even Dante, that first imagination of Christendom, had never dreamed of seeing it, as the 20th century philosophers of absurdity and despair were incapable of guessing that it might be seen. And seeing it so, one question came to the minds of those who looked at it. Is it inhabited, they said to each other, and laughed. And then they did not laugh. What came to their minds 100,000 miles and more into space, halfway to the moon, they put it? What came to their minds was the life on that little lonely floating planet, that tiny raft in the enormous empty night. Is it inhabited? The medieval notion of the Earth put man at the center of everything. The nuclear notion of the Earth put him nowhere, beyond the range of reason even, lost in absurdity and war. This latest notion may have other consequences. Formed as it was in the minds of heroic voyagers who were also men, it may remake our image of mankind. No longer that preposterous figure at the center. No longer that degraded and degrading victim off at the margins of reality and blind with blood, man may at last become himself. To see the earth as it truly is, small and blue and beautiful in that eternal silence where it floats, is to see ourselves as riders on the earth together, brothers on that bright loveliness in the eternal cold, brothers who know now they are truly brothers.
A poem there by Archibald MacLeish from 1968. And yes, when the pictures of the Earth were published, it really did change many people's view of our home planet. Well, this is a space show. We have more about Apollo 8 coming up.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
This is the Space Show, celebrating the events that happened 55 years ago. And today, it was only hours away from landing back here on Earth, having gone to the moon and orbited it 10 times. Well, James Dickey was an American poet, and he got himself busy and had this poem published in Life magazine in the January 10th issue of 1969, just days after the landing back here on the moon. I'm reading the poem. Now, not the best poetry reader in the world, but I can't find any good recording of it, so here goes. First Manned Moon Orbit by James Dickey. So long. So long as the void is hysterical, bolted out, you float on nothing but procedure alone. Eating, sleeping like a man, deprived of the weight of his own and all humanity in the name of a new life, and through this, making new time slowly, the moon comes. Its mountains bulge, they crack and hold together, closer, spreading, smash crust of uncanny rock, ash glowing, alchemizing the sun. With peace, with the peace of a country, bombed out by the universe. You lean back from the great light-shattered face, the pale blaze of Godstone coming. Close, too close, and the dead seas turn, the craters hover, turn their dark side to kill the radio and the one voice of Earth. You and your computers have brought out the silence of mountains the animal eye has not seen since the earth split. Since God first found geometry, would move, move in mysterious ways. You hang, mysteriously pulling, the moon dark pulling, and solitude breaks down like an electrical system. Is it something else? Nothing is something? Something I am trying to say, oh God, Almighty, to come back, to complete the curve, to come back, singing with procedure, back through the last dark of the moon, past the dim ritual random stones of oblivion, and through the blinding edge of moonlight into the sun. And behold, the blue planet steeped in its dream of reality, its calculated vision shaking with the only love. Ronald Pereira was a composer of music of limited appeal whose compositions range over many decades. Now, he died on August the 4th of this year. Now, you would be more likely to hear his works performed in the austere confines of the Melbourne Recital Centre rather than the Hamer Hall, much less the State Theatre. In 1972, Pereira took that James Dickey poem we've just heard and set it to music. He titled the four-part work Apollo Circling. Now, if you look it up on the internet, you'll find claims that it is about Apollo 11, the first human landing on the moon. But no, it is about Apollo 8, which circled the moon. Now, as far as the Space Show is aware, it has only been recorded once. That was by soprano Gretchen de Armand with pianist Constance Lassell. Now, the title of each of the four movements come directly from Dickey's poem. The first track is called So Long.
So long,
music composed by Ronald Pereira. Apollo Circling, about the experience of the Apollo 8 astronauts and their orbiting of the moon. Based on that poem we read earlier, which is James Dickey's The First Manned Moon Orbit. And the lyrics are taken from the poem. And here's the next track, which is called The Moon Comes. On the Space Show, a musical rendition of James Dickey's 1969 poem about Apollo 8 for the first manned moon orbit. And yes, the lyrics are taken from the poem. So here we go with the track 3, which is You Lean Back. Shattered face. That's Gretchen Darmand with Apollo Circling, and the lyrics taken from the poem by James Dickey. Here's the final track. Again, the words from the poem, "You Hang Mysteriously."
Thank you.
So there we have it, the answer to the question I posed last week. Who were the first people to see the whole of the moon? Well, now we know the answer.
I saw the crescent.
Well, let's go out now with a little taste of the music by Jessica Locke for the movie Apollo 8.